The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 1st of April, and you're very welcome along to the Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. Obviously, the big news we're hearing this morning is final confirmation that common sense, I think we can say, has prevailed, and what we had once before but was threatened to be taken from us has been returned, and that is a vital link to health services in the capital, with the Dublin Donegal PSO returning to the schedule that we have become accustomed to, that we have worked with in order to access medical treatment down there, but also to flights that make sense from a commercial perspective in terms of, you know, getting people who have businesses here or business interests in and out of the county, tourists, golfers, whatever it might be. So after a fantastic campaign, a grassroots campaign for the most part, it has to be said, with thousands upon thousands of you signing a petition, as I say, common sense has prevailed, and the schedule which we are familiar with will return, as you just heard in the news. We'll have, I suppose, a look back at some of the highs and lows of that campaign and reaction to that news a little later on in the programme. So it is significant. Stay where you are, and it will be of interest to you, I have no doubt. Let's start with a look at the papers, though. The Finn Valley Voice has quotes from Councillor Brian Carr. Donegal County Council must supply modular homes to its defective concrete victims. It will be impossible to cope without them, says Councillor Carr. Given the scale of the defective concrete blocks crisis and housing shortages, modular homes are essential to support family relocations during remediation, he says. We know the scale of the problem here. Some 2,000 social housing units are defective across the county, and it still never really makes or has made sense to me as to why the government, the housing agency, whomever was ultimately responsible, so quickly ruled that modular homes weren't a solution to this crisis. I, at the beginning, to be honest, you thought, really, is this the way forward? And then, obviously, having spoken to those who would benefit from it, I realised that, yeah, this seems to be a practical solution. And these modular homes are going up left, right and centre. Of course, they were, for various reasons. And now we're talking about allowing modular homes in back gardens. And yet, it's still not seen as a logical solution to the crisis here. A crisis, really, that, you know, the more a scheme improves, and let's hope that scheme does improve for those who feel it's not where it needs to be, the more people will go onto that scheme and the more demand there would be for additional housing. So whatever happens on a national scale in terms of the housing market and demand, we're always, or for the next while at least, going to have high demand here. Right, Donald Trump, he's quoted in the newspapers today. And, you know, I do track quite closely what's going on around the world, as we all do. And in any given day, he can make three or four statements, and a lot of them are contradictory. But what he does say does make a difference. And he said effectively overnight, late last night, that America will be out in one or two weeks or 2 to 3 weeks. And that has significant implications for oil prices. The oil price went from, I think, $1.17 a barrel down to $1.03. So it's not insignificant. And the sooner this is wrapped up, the better. But we have this situation where the Strait of Hormuz, which we've all become familiar with now, it was open and running and was that essential fuel line to the rest of the world. And then it closed. And now Trump is angry that he's decided now it doesn't have to open for him to end his part of the war. And he's got some sharp words for NATO. Donald Trump is attempting to wash his hands of the deepening Middle East crisis of his own making, says the Daily Star, telling other countries to get your own oil as supplies tighten across the world. In an extraordinary blast, the US president claimed he had already done the hard part by launching military action against Iran, and he insisted it was now up to allies to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Posting online, Trump said, all of those countries that can't get jet fuel because of the Strait of Hormuz, like the United Kingdom, which refused to get involved in the decapitation of Iran, I have a suggestion for you. Number one, buy from the US. We've got plenty. And number two, build up some delayed courage. Go take the Strait and just take it. Now, his relationship with the UN or NATO, sorry, seems to be a confusing one, because NATO is an alliance of defence. So if one NATO member is attacked, they all band together. And that is the show of force. It's not an attacking organisation or association. But in the world of Donald Trump, the truth, it doesn't really matter, because he's got his own truth social, and there it is. But anyway, there's a few interesting statements coming out. Australia, they've a State of the Nation address. Britain has one this morning. It'll be interesting to see what Keir Starmer has to say. Donald Trump this evening. I think we are at end game. How it all ends, I don't know, but hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. A, to stop the incredible loss of life, but B, obviously to try and get the world in some sort of, or back onto some sort of a level keel. Now, while all this is going on and the world is burning, we're being told that Storm Owen, which brought Ireland's biggest ever winds and a record €300 million in insurance payouts, was only one of the ways climate change damaged the country last year, according to a report from the Climate Change Advisory Council. Wildfire destruction was 40% higher than in recent years. The spring-summer drought was one of the most extensive ever, with water restrictions in 15 counties. And the swing from drought to autumn deluge was one of the most dramatic. Storms and flooding hit many parts, damaging homes, businesses, farms and forests, and exposing vulnerabilities in critical infrastructure and essential services, including energy, water and telecommunications. So they're going through, effectively everything that happened last year and attributing it to climate change. And speaking of the weather, it looks like we could get a nasty wee blast this weekend with something of a storm or storm-like conditions being forecast for the northwest. I'll give you more firm details on that later. On to the Irish Independent now. And Martina and Amy Burke were arrested yesterday at Castlereagh Prison, County Roscommon, where Enoch Burke is in custody. In February, a judge ordered the imprisonment for 2 weeks of the mother and sister of the jailed school teacher, saying it's long past time for the court to call a halt to the family circus. In a statement yesterday, Gardaí said An Garda Síoch Chána executed a High Court order against two females in Castlereagh, County Roscommon. They'll be brought to Mountjoy Women's Prison in foot of an order of committal. An Garda Síoch Chána has no further comment. Now, of course, the law is there and we can't be seen to be flouting the law, can we? It just doesn't seem a fantastic use of resources, it has to be said. So these two women now are or going to Mountjoy. Mr Justice Brian Cregan imposed the sanction over the behaviour of Martina Burke, a teacher, and Amy Burke, a solicitor, at a hearing on February 20th when they engaged in shouting and roaring at the top of their voices to the extent they had to be removed by Gardaí. The judge said he had to abandon the hearing because of the behaviour, which plunged proceedings into chaos. Let's go to the Irish Daily Mail now, and I'm not sure of the motivation or what the public opinion on this might be, but Gardaí could soon record the ethnicity of suspects and those convicted of serious crimes such as sexual assault under new plans being prepared by the government. An Garda Síoch Chána has told the Irish Daily Mail that it is in favour of recording the ethnicity of sex offenders, with Sinn Féin also calling on the government to introduce such legislation. A spokesperson for the Department of Justice said the programme for government had committed to the introduction of a common identification number for individuals within the criminal justice system following a widespread consultation with stakeholders in data, civil liberties and criminal justice. It was decided that PPS numbers should be used for the purpose, and to get a PPS number, you must note both your nationality and, if you were born in Ireland, your country of birth. So we'll see. I think most countries do that. You get some better understanding maybe of trends and what have you. I'm sure many of you are of an age that remember the first moon landing, and I presume, given all the films that were made subsequently and all the talk about it, that it was just the biggest deal. You do look on, and I don't doubt it happened. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but part of me sometimes wonders, did it happen? When you think of what was sent there, like your average mobile phone that you have very close to you right now, is far more powerful, far more computing power than the spaceship that landed on the moon. And then it they all got off it and then they all got on and then it took off. And it doesn't look really like it's fit for purpose. And we haven't really, as a humanity, been able to go back and do it again. And in, with all the technology now, sometimes even probes or whatever you call them landed on various planets, can't even land on their feet. They end up on their heads. But anyway, it all did happen, I'm told. And it's going to happen again because NASA is having its first lunar mission in 54 years. And as I say, many of you might remember this the first time round. There's not a big hoo-ha about it for some reason or other, but anyway, here we are. It's humanity's first flight to the moon since 1972. In a throwback to Apollo, NASA's Artemis II mission will send four astronauts on a lunar fly-around today. They'll hurtle several thousand miles beyond the moon and then come straight back in less than 10 days. And they're not landing. Here's a snapshot of the mission. Well, I won't go through that anyway at the moment, but I thought they were going to land on the moon. But apparently they're going to hurtle several thousand miles beyond the moon and then come straight back in less than 10 days. All right, well, fair play to them. I don't see the point, but there you go. There's been a broad welcome to the news that Donegal held the line and won. Donegal Cancer Flights and Services are amongst a whole host of people who have welcomed the full restoration of the Donegal Dublin PSO Air Service. It's a story we've covered right from the very moment it broke. And we're going to hear some of the voices who were so vocal and played such an important part in the return of these services. Mary Coyle, obviously, if the manager of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services, will hear from her a couple of occasions through the campaign. We'll hear from Donegal Airport and also to a family whose rug would be completely pulled from under them if the changes that had been agreed were allowed to stay in place. There are calls on the Minister for Transport to intervene to protect the Donegal to Dublin afternoon flight amid fears it could be lost under a new contract for the public service obligation, sir. New PSO or a new contract for PSO flights between Donegal Airport and Carrickfinn, Donegal Airport at Carrickfinn and Dublin Airport is due to commence on the 26th of February 2026. H. Docherty is Managing Director of Donegal Airport and is with me now. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time this Tuesday.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you. I mean, obviously, if there's an aircraft on the ground, if we have like a foggy morning, if the aircraft's ready and it's able to go out, if you have, you know, fog and suddenly the flight can't land, we're going to definitely have more cancellations and diversions than we would have if we actually had the aircraft in the night before.
I don't think there's going to be a better person with an insight into this than Mary Coyle, who's founder of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. And as soon as I heard this story, Mary, I wanted your take on it, right? Because you're not going to spin it one way or other. You're going to give us the reality for the people that you work with. So what is your initial reaction, Mary, to these proposed changes?
Well, you know, Greg, I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that, first of all, that there was no consultation whatsoever. Absolutely none. We have over 500 patients that travel up and down to Dublin for cancer diagnosis or treatment, and we have children with long-term and life-limiting illnesses, and this is not practical. This is not practical for people going to Dublin. We have done so much work with St. Vincent's, St. Luke's, St. James's, and the oncology departments, the Irish Cancer Society, in order that patients going to Dublin would get early morning appointments so as that they could try and manage the lunchtime flight home. This is not practical at all.
I must go to Sharon. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for helping us get the story out there. I know speaking publicly is not for everyone, or radio is not for everyone, but it's such a critical issue. It's really important to get as many voices as we can. So just in your own time, can you explain why the flight to Dublin is so important for your family?
Well, my wee boy, John, was diagnosed in 20 with a condition called Shwachman-Diamond syndrome. Very rare condition, and it kind of popped up. He was always kind of sick from birth, but it was a bit of a shock when we found out it is life-limiting. So he has had yearly bone marrow biopsies, and he has to have bloods done every 3 months, and he's under several doctors in Temple Street. His day can consist of lots of blood tests, scans, lots of hoking and poking by doctors. His haematology team are fantastic. They get us in and out as quick as possible so that he can be back on the afternoon flight, because they think it's amazing that we can do this. He's quite tired when he's finished, and the thought of sitting in an airport till 10 to 7 in the evening is just, it's just crazy. When you can be back down and have him back in his bed or back on the couch by, you know, by 3 o'clock.
And just to be clear, the hospital works with you understanding where he's travelling from and having to get back home, because they also understand the strain and stress it would be putting on him and you as a family, of course, in trying to drive back or what have you. So the hospital understands.
The hospital, many a time I go in and they're like, oh my God, you've come from Donegal, you must, you know, what a journey. And I'm like, I actually made it here in 50 minutes. And they're looking at me like, you know, how did you, how is that possible?
They would fly in at night, have to get from the airport to accommodation, then get to the appointment in the hospital, and then sit around for the rest of the day for a return flight. I can see almost refusing treatments rather than going through that. How do you reflect on this meeting with the minister?
Well, I must say, Greg, that it was a positive meeting. We don't have all the answers yet, but I feel that we're all moving in the right direction. When we met with the minister yesterday, he is fully committed, and his officials, to fix this. They realise that this, they don't like where they are at the moment. You know, we're moving in the right direction. We made it very clear as well, Greg, that if we did not get the answer that we needed next week, we will be mobilising the people of Donegal, and we will be back up at that gate.
So that was just some of the coverage over the last wee while to get us where we are at right now. And I'm joined on the programme by Mary Coyle, manager of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. Mary, Donegal held the line and won.
Absolutely, Greg, we won. It's actually very emotional this morning. When we got word that that there was going to be a full restoration of the flights and the aircraft housed in Donegal, it was just the best news this morning. We've been waiting for this for weeks. And Greg, it just is such a good feeling. We're so proud of the people of Donegal, everybody who stood with us, everybody who campaigned with us, all those cancer patients that shared their stories, their heartbreaking stories, just like the one we've just heard now. And there's an awful lot of people to thank here. And it is really, you know, the cancer support centres throughout Ireland who stood with us, the students of Pobble Scolaghi Dor, Donegal Airport, and all our public representative across all parties who held the line with us. It is amazing, the power of people.
It is, when they get together and made an argument that couldn't be denied.
Absolutely. And when we went to Dublin to meet the officials and Minister Dara O'Brien, we were taking nothing else. There was no way we were going to settle for anything less. We weren't asking for more. We weren't asking for less. We just wanted to retain what we had. And we made that very, very clear. And we have bombarded them on a daily basis. Every day we were in contact with the department and their officials, and we said we are not settling for anything else. This has to be restored. And they listened. They listened.
And they had to listen to that this just wasn't a PSO like you might see in other areas, that this was a lifeline. And perhaps maybe, for those who may not be aware down there, got a valuable insight into what life is like in Donegal in terms of accessing healthcare.
Absolutely. And there are so many people using this service to go to Dublin for appointments. They have no choice. Absolutely no choice. They have to go to Dublin for life-saving treatment. They have to go for critical appointments. They have to go for their chemotherapy and they have no choice. And this was the only way. And we've seen, just as we were booking flights over the last couple of days, there were people who were actually going up in the evening with the added cost then of an overnight stay, because they were worried they would not make their appointments in the morning. So it had already begun to affect people financially again. The stress of this for the cancer patients and children with lifelong illnesses, for their parents, the stress of this over the past couple of weeks, all of that should not have happened. But it did. We fought, we stood the line, and God, Greg, we won for Donegal. We did.
Indeed. And there were battles too, you know, because it could have been easy to sort of back away when there was talk of this review. But it was very obvious from the get-go that the review would not catch what we've been talking about, what you've been campaigning for. And in fact, the review could have made the argument for not having a PSO at all, if the truth be told. So there were battles along the way. In other words, you know, that's not going to keep us quiet. We know that doesn't make sense. This is what we need. This is what we want.
Absolutely. And there were a lot of battles, you know, there was a lot of toing and froing. When they talked about our review, we would have had to be part of that review for people to understand. And when we met the officials in Dublin, they did not understand. They didn't understand. They hadn't thought of the islands. They hadn't thought of all of these things. And this shows that people on the ground, the people that are working with communities all across Donegal, that is the people to connect with. If you want to know what is needed in Donegal, come down to the grassroots, connect with the people, and they will tell you. And you know, we have shown that the power of the people of Donegal is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and lots of people have a hand in this too. You know, even when the petition was being handed around, sometimes people can feel a little bit helpless, or they don't really know what they can do or what have you. But those people that took their time to sign that document all have played a role in this. This was, I'm going to say, headed by you and the fantastic service that you're the head of, the politicians, as you've mentioned, but the people. The people themselves, those ones at the football matches or those that went online. This is what happens when you get together and say no.
Absolutely. And the petition was still ongoing up until this morning. And at this point, we're almost at 24,000 people who have signed this petition. People all across the county of Donegal, further afield, people, our diaspora that are all over the world. So many people have signed this petition, and it is the voice of the people. Might they not be in Ireland, they were still standing with us here in Donegal. And can I just pay tribute to all my colleagues in Donegal Cancer Flights and Services? What an amazing battle it was. Unbelievable. What a campaign. For all the staff here in Enid Naoimh Pádraic, we could not have done this with everybody that helped us. And you know, Greg, I am ready to celebrate.
It's a bit early. It's only 9:30. sorry, just a bit of practicalities. I heard a date there of May. So where are we at now? The new schedule, which is the old schedule, departing from Donegal 7:55 a.m., returning at 12:55 p.m. The afternoon flight will depart Donegal at 2:30 p.m., returning from Dublin at 6:55 p.m. What happens between now and then? Do we have the old schedule in place? Sorry, I've lost track a little bit. Where are we at now, and what happens between now and then?
Well, the schedule that came in last weekend, whereas the flight coming from Dublin at 6:30 in the morning, going back to Dublin at 5 to 8, and then coming back down in the evening at 6:55 and going up at 8:30. That will remain in place now until the 1st of May when we return to the old schedule, which is the midday flight, the morning flight, and then the evening flight, which is what the people of Donegal stood for and what they deserve. So we'll have to stick with this schedule for a month, and we really appreciate the fact that when we did go to Dublin, Greg, that the minister did listen to us and his officials, and they made the right decision. And you know, it is very important to say that there is such a strong voice in Donegal, and it is amazing how people can change decisions of government. And we should all remember that if we all stand together, we can move mountains.
Okay, Mary, listen, obviously, as you can imagine, lots and lots of people are messaging and texting in. You've played the critical role in all of this, be it on the airwaves or down at the meetings. Not taking no for an answer in any of those meetings and making a very clear point for us. So it's not just for those in tourism and industry that will benefit from this, because we'll
Absolutely.
Have the status quo retained. It's those that currently use the services, not just cancer patients, children with different issues and what have you. And those of us who may need to rely on this into the future, Mary, we owe you a great debt of gratitude. You are absolutely phenomenal, and well done, and thank you.
And Greg, can I just finish by saying we didn't have to use it, use the buses at the end, but just thank you to all those amazing bus companies that were willing to give their buses for free to go to Dublin as well. So I hope I haven't left anybody out. It's a day for celebration. It's a day to be thankful. And thanks to everybody who was involved.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Have a wonderful day. And if you want to celebrate now, I'll give you a free pass. How's that?
That's great, thanks. But it is a bit early. Thank
you. Bye-bye, look after yourself. Bye-bye. Thanks very much. Mary Cole, manager of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. And Kathleen Griffin was a voice we heard during that campaign as well. Kathleen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Now, you are a user of the flights. What's your reaction to this news today?
So much happiness. You can't put it into words. Like, but it's something that we shouldn't have lost in the first place. It's something we shouldn't have fought for, you know, in the first place. But it's just elation, absolute elation, you know, for Mary and her team. I know we all went to Dublin and all that kind of stuff, but Mary, Father Brian, the team, Declan, Maureen, Mary, Joe, Johnny, we all like played a part. But Mary and Father Brian, my God, they have put up some fight for this, and they got us all online, and we all, it's just elation. I just can't put it into words, to be quite honest with you, Greg. And yourself and your team by helping us highlight it. There's so many people to thank, and you just can't thank them all. So it's just absolute elation.
Yes,
you know, okay, we'll be without it for a month, but sure, a month in the scale of things is,
hopefully now this will never happen again, because it still remains to be seen from my perspective as to who drafted the tender, and why we just presumed that it would always stay the way it was, and why there was such a lack of knowledge as to what this flight actually was used for. But it means for people like yourself, Kathleen, and others who've been through or will go through treatment, that we have that lifeline, and it is a lifeline, and we had to fight hard for it, but we've got it.
Yeah, but we shouldn't have had to fight for it. We should not have had to fight. Cancer patients have enough to deal with the loss of income, the loss of their health. You know, that's another thing we shouldn't have had to fight for. But we did, and we got it. And what the people of Donegal, they were all behind us, and they knew we weren't going to take no for an answer.
Yeah.
You know, they knew in the meetings we weren't taking no for an answer. So hopefully this won't happen again, because Mary did highlight it in the first meeting. So I think they have taken that on board, so that this won't happen again.
Okay.
You know, they said it would go into the agreement, I think. You know.
Going forward,
but
yeah.
That it won't happen again.
Well, yeah. Kathleen, I really wanted to touch base with you again. Well done. Thank you so Thank much you. For your time.
Thank you very much, Greg. Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Well done. All right, that's Kathleen Griffin there. And I hope I'm not misquoting former Donegal TD Thomas Gilday, but maybe this falls into this quote. I think he said one time in the Dáil or outside the Dáil, they're slow learners, but we'll learn them. Greg, I know the local politicians trying to take the glory for the result. It was the people that did it. Yes, indeed, but I understand where you're coming from. And listen, shows like this hold politicians to account, and I suppose that's part of what we do and what we must do. But also, when politicians come together and work for the people, they do their bit, credit where that is due as well. And there's been a couple of big issues lately where we've seen politicians all sing from the same hymn sheet. And a lesson has been learnt, I think, that that's when results can happen. But fundamentally, and I've been saying this on this programme for years and years and years, the big changes in this county happen when communities organise and campaign. And I could list a dozen of them off the top of my head, whereby it is the community, the grassroots, that have achieved big results. And it's fantastic that we've been able to be a part of that pretty much in every single one of those over the last number of years. I could just trace where the conversation starts. It's an initial phone call where someone hears that something's about to happen, and then we talk about it the next day, and then the next day, and then next thing you know, it's a bigger story. Then it's on the nationals. Then there's protests or campaigns. And if we do it right, and when I say we, I mean the community of Donegal, we get things done. A caller says, well done to Mary Coyle and her team and supporters. Wonderful news about the flight. Shame that we have the month of April with no afternoon flight, but great news today. Another fantastic news. Well done to the people of Donegal. People power to us. Well, there's people power, student power, teacher power, parent power, maybe even Letterkenny power that might be able to make some progress into a decision that we were greeted with great surprise when St. Eunan's College was not included in a massive round of national funding. We only had one school, really, actually, in the Northwest that was included in it. And St. Eunan's College, well, I'll tell you, I'll speak to the principal of it, Damien McCrory, and we'll get the background and where we're at with him. Damien, good morning to you. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm good. Right, just for those who may have been under a rock, bring us up to speed with this story. How long planning for a development of St. Eunan's College has been on the cards, and I suppose really the fact that, you know, there is a planning permission that is time sensitive. So this whole topic is time sensitive. So just a quick overview of where we have been and where we're at the moment before we talk about the latest development.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, the campaign has been ongoing for the last coming up in 30 years. We've been looking to just refurbish and get better fit for purpose rooms and so forth in the school. And so we would have joined, okay, the ADAPT 2 programme in 2019, and that was the fast track programme, okay, for our building project. And that was following decisions previous, okay, where we planning permission wasn't given, you know, Board Pinella had turned us down and so forth. So this was the new fast track programme that we were on, okay, to get through. Our planning went through in 2022. And things were developing, and then we got stuck at, I suppose, at stage 2B, you know, and we're just awaiting approval, I suppose, from the department or the building unit to go to tender. And, you know, we're stuck at this pre-tender stage for quite some time now. So that's where we're at. And when the announcement was made in January back earlier this year that we weren't on that list for 26-27, there was huge disappointment, okay, among the staff, students, parents, guardians, you know, and the whole of Letterkenny, really, and further afield. So we started our campaign to try and secure a meeting with the minister, okay, to discuss this and to discuss a pathway forward, okay. And we've been in communication with a lot of the politicians, both the councillors and the you know, the TDs, okay, to try and secure this meeting.
And that meeting is going to take place, and it's a significant development, actually, to get a face-to-face meeting with the Education Minister, Hildegard Nocton, because, A, firstly, you'll be able to outline in the clearest way possible the work that's been gone in, the need, and what have you, but also, two, she'll have to respond to that. So there's nothing guaranteed. It doesn't necessarily mean funding will be forthcoming, but it's an incredibly significant thing, I think, to secure a face-to-face with the minister responsible.
Well, it definitely is. We're delighted. Okay, no, I've only received word. I haven't received it from her department as yet, but I did receive word, okay, just earlier this morning, about an hour and a half ago, to say that meeting had been secured and it will take place at a time in April. And so we're delighted to get that, because that's what we've been looking for. Even before the list came out, we were looking to secure a meeting with Minister Nocton. So we're delighted that meeting is now taking place, so that we can find a pathway forward, that we can secure, you know, something, you know, that the needs, as you say, the needs of the students, the needs of the staff, the needs, you know, that we need to upgrade, you know, our facilities here, and I think everyone is aware of that. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward now to that meeting. Where, again, there's no promises, okay, we know that, but we're going to, you know, to fight our corner and to just to state, okay, what is needed and to get a pathway forward.
Yeah, that's for sure, because the one thing that is guaranteed, you'll be able to, because of the amount of passion, time, money that's gone in to getting the plans to where they are right now, there's probably not another school in the country can match that, I would argue. I don't know. I haven't seen the level of preparedness for every school in the country. But I think we can be confident that the argument that you and those at that meeting for investment in St. Eunan's College will be a very, very good, positive, strong argument.
Yeah, well, I would be hoping that will be the case, because there's been a huge, as you say, there's been a huge amount of money and time and effort that has gone into getting us to this stage. We've never got as far as this point. So it is vitally important, okay, that we do, you know, that we do try and progress this project and get it to where we want it to be, okay, and get a time frame, okay. It is important that there's some sort of a time frame that's there, so that we know that we're not waiting week on week, month on month to see, okay, well, what's happening next. Okay, that's some sort of a time frame that's there, so that we know when it's going to happen.
All right, okay. Well, we'll wait with bated breath for that meeting, which is taking place this month now, actually. It is April now, believe it or not.
It is April, yes.
Yeah, okay. So we'll find out later. Well done to you, Damon, and the students who've been out looking for signatures and all of that. And we'll hope that this is the first step, really, on a clearer path to the investment that the college so richly deserves.
And Craig, can I just say a huge thanks to our Student Council, the Parents Association, to the staff, to the local community and further afield, because it's just not like people nationally and beyond, okay, have been plugging our case, okay, to whoever they can. And we are very, very grateful, okay, to the alumni as well, okay, that's, you know, they have been fantastic as well and securing different meetings with different people as well. So I want to say a huge thanks to everyone, and please, hopefully now that this meeting will bring us some good news back to the county.
Brilliant. Okay, well done. Thanks very much, Damien.
Thanks. Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now we are joined on the programme by Diarmaid Pepper, journalist with journal.ie. Good to have you back on the show. Good morning to you, Diarmaid.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
A lot of parents, guardians are learning, with disappointment, it has to be said, of significant changes coming to the school transport scheme for the 26-27 school year, and there are increases in costs.
Yes, so quite significant hikes, actually. So school transport fees have been doubled for primary school children, and for post-primary school children, they've increased by a third. So for the current school year, parents will know that transport fees for primary school children are €50. €75 for post-primary school children, and the maximum that any family will have to pay is €125. However, for the upcoming school year, fees for primary school children will be €100, that's a doubling, while the cost for post-primary school children is increased by €25 to also hit €100. And the maximum that a family will have to pay is now the maximum they'll have to pay for primary school children is €200, and the maximum full stop is €220, so a €95 increase. So quite considerable hikes there.
Is there any reason being given for this, Jeremy? Because it's not like a knee-jerk reaction to the global fuel crisis at the moment or anything, is it? This has been in the works. But have we been given a reason as to why they have to jump so significantly by the state?
Yeah, so Bus Éireann operates the service on behalf of the Department of Education and Youth, and I asked Bus Éireann about this, and they said basically it's nothing to do with us, we don't set the fees. So I asked the department, and the Department of Education said that over 90% of the transport costs are covered by the state. They try to... It is quite a considerable increase, but they pointed to the cost per journey per school day, and they said for primary school students it'll be 55 cent per school day and 60 cent per school day for post-primary school students, and that no family will pay more than €1.32 per day, no matter how many children use the service in the family. And the department said having fees help them to make better use of resources and prevent seats from going unused. And he also pointed out that there's flexible instalment options available. But obviously politicians aren't happy. Sinn Féin spokesperson in education, for example, Darren O'Rourke, he said the hike is incomprehensible in the middle of an escalating cost of living crisis, and that the increases couldn't have come at a worse time. Families budgeting to the max. He made the point that school transport is essential, it's not a luxury, and the government should be reducing measures, not increasing them. And he's calling Hildegard Nocton, the education minister, to reverse tact. Social Democrats education spokesperson Jen Cummings has done the same. She said it's another charge in what's supposed to be a free education system. So she said the increase is part of a pattern where the government is increasing or introducing charges associated with education while claiming that the system is free. And she also noted that the increase can come at a worse time with the cost of living crisis, and called on Hildegard Nocton also to reverse course, and said that families are just at breaking point and can't absorb anymore.
Yeah, and when they break it down and describe how much it is per journey and all that kind of stuff, those who are probably well-resourced, Michael, well, what are you complaining about? But if you are struggling or on the brink of struggling and everything else is going up and you see a doubling of a price, it does really, it is money that you do have to find. Now, they're being quite strict, aren't they, in terms of applications as well, aren't they, Jeremy?
So, yes, and just for parents out there listening, the portal for school transport applications and payments opened last Friday, and it will close on Friday, the 8th of May. The department noted that it's going to remain free for children with valid medical cards and for children with special educational needs and people who are eligible for it. So if children are eligible at primary school level if they live at least 3.2 kilometres from their nearest school, as determined by the department and Bus Éireann. And at post-primary level, children are eligible if they live at least 4.8 kilometres from their nearest post-primary school or education centre. And for any parents out there who have children who don't meet that criteria, any spare seats that might be available, after all the eligible children have been catered for their seats, any free seats are then given to children who don't meet the above criteria.
Okay, but you couldn't bank on that, as you've kind of hinted at there. And finally, certainly in this part of the world, and I'm sure nationwide, bus drivers can be out of a premium, and there is a driver age limit extension being introduced. This is a trial, is it?
Yes, so I believe it's going to be a 2-year trial, and then after that they'll, review the scheme and see how it went. So basically the upper age limit for school bus drivers has increased from 70 to 72. However, it isn't quite strict criteria so far. It's only four, you know, mini buses with a maximum of 8 seats. So it's not, you know, the big school buses just yet. But perhaps at the end of that trial, it may be decided to, you know, ramp up the scheme and make it applicable to larger style buses.
Okay, hardly worth it, that one, I would say, when you get many 7-seaters out on the road and they're just family cars. But anyway, that's the facts. Jerwin, thank you very much for your information. I really do appreciate it. Look after yourself.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Diarmaid Pepper there, journalist with journal.ie. So the headline, primary school fees are doubling. I still don't understand why they're doubling so much so quickly. But the annual fee for primary school children is increasing from 50 to 100 euro. That's a 100% increase, of course. Post-primary fees also going up from 75 to 100. That's a 33% increase or thereabouts. The maximum family contribution, so the most a single home or household has to pay, regardless of how many children use the bus, is seeing a steep rise. Primary only families, the cap rises to 200. Post-primary families, the cap rises to 220, up from 125, a total increase of 95 euro. What difference will that make to you? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. Mary Coyle for Donegal Person of the Year, says the listener. Well, she would be a very worthy recipient, and not just actually off the back of this latest campaign, but we speak to Mary quite regularly, and you would know she's very passionate about her community and does sterling work and has done for a very long time. Hi, Greg. The amount of people I was chatting to last week and asking, was the going away for the Easter weekend? And they said no, because they're afraid of driving back the next morning with a few drinks the night before and getting stopped. Right, okay. Re the Burks, if a family of Muslims were pulling the crack the Burks are at, people would be calling for them to be strung up. Madness, we still have to hear about them. Shows how much American money is invested in maintaining the story. Well, it's not about maintaining it. I mean, if a judge makes a ruling and then the guards act on that ruling, it's nothing to do with American investment. I mean, those are facts, realities of news that's actually happening right now. And if you weren't covering stuff like that, you'd be shot, wouldn't you? We welcome on to the programme now MEP Maria Walsh, co-chair of the European Parliament's LGBTQI plus intergroup. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And thank you so much for joining us. Right. Now, you are calling on the EU to introduce a European-wide ban on dangerous conversion therapy practices that, you say, are still taking place today. So what are you talking about there? What are conversion therapies?
Yeah, just to share with those listening. So conversion therapy is any treatment aimed at changing a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. And right now in the European Union, only 8 member states have declared this unlawful and have banned it outright. Sadly, Ireland is not in that list. We have lived experience from individuals who have gone through conversion therapy practices. So you have elements of psychotherapy, medication, electric shock therapy, and in some cases, exorcism.
And how common are they? When you talk about, yeah, where is that happening? And is it state-sponsored? Is it prescribed through the relevant health board? I mean, when you talk of things like that, what is the reality?
Yeah, and in truth, it depends on the member state of which we're talking about. Here in Ireland, and in some of the more western side member states, data and research is incredibly difficult to find because it is done in quite secret settings. What we do, though, is have lived experience. And Trinity College in 2023 did a huge body of work on capturing the lived experience of LGBTI plus people who have gone through conversion therapy and have confirmed overdoses of pharmaceuticals, of medications, electric shock in some cases, extensive prayer, trying to literally cut it out of someone's life. And at the time, the Irish government had declared that this would be banned. And sadly, I'm here talking about it and holding my own government account, as well as other member states that we work with. To your question, though, in other member states, more in the west, or sorry, in the eastern side of the EU bloc, it is more prominent in the sense of very much done by religious orders. And other psychiatric or psychological associations have outwardly come out with that. Here in Ireland, it's not the case. I just want to stress for those listening. But what's done in secret is still done, so, and we need to ban it.
Have we not tried to ban conversion therapy, or has there been resistance to an EU wide ban on conversion therapy?
No, I mean, in the European Parliament last mandate, so prior to the 2024 elections, I and a number of colleagues worked with the Parliament to ban it outright. Sadly, we're still waiting. Like I said, only 8 member states have banned it in their own legislation. In Ireland here, we're still waiting that. It's been in multiple programmes for government.
But it's more foot dragging here, isn't it, rather than lack of will?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, the feedback, and I'm as frustrated as my LGBTI colleagues, as well as our allies. Some of the delays have been around legal complexity. And what I mean by that is defining what exactly counts as conversion therapy, and then distinguish harmful practices from the likes of pastor care or religious expressions. I mean, there's a big difference between having, in my eyes, between having a conversation with a pastor or a religious leader about how you're feeling, to then on the extreme form of exorcism or using any form of medication to ultimately dull out who you are and how you celebrate your life. So, I mean, this is a call. I've written to a number of our representatives. I'm putting pressure on our own colleagues who chair committees who do with that, because if it's been in multiple programs for government, there shouldn't be any further delay. Given, I know those listening are probably saying we've a lot more going on. Absolutely. But sadly, what we're seeing is rollbacks and minorities, particularly women and LGBTI plus persons of colour, on the attack, both online and offline. So our legal settings have to match what we're saying publicly. And right now, in terms of conversion therapy, that's simply not the case.
Pardon my ignorance on the workings of the EU. Okay,
that's, I mean, all right. Hey, most days I don't. Most days I get lost too.
That's it, right? But let's talk about, you know, say it's a ban on children using mobile phones. You have this conversation whether it's a state ban or we wait and see what Europe does. Right. So I know there's 8 so far. Ireland yet has to introduce anything nationally in relation to this. But why is there not a European wide? Yeah. Rule in relation to this then?
Yeah, and great question, because I would feel the same. You would imagine, you know, the commission or a council level, they decide elements and then like overnight it should happen. We are waiting on an updated EU LGBTI plus strategy from the commission that will outright ban this. This puts on another pressure.
Do you think there's an element of waiting and see where the whole global conversation on particularly maybe in the trans space we've seen recently with the rulings from the Olympic Council and others, and we see what's happening in Britain, though it's not a member of the EU, it's still in the family, right? Do you think there's an element of waiting to see where all of that lands before trying to figure something out?
Yeah, sadly, I do. I think, I mean, we've talked before around deep fakes and the use of artificial intelligence and the impact it has predominantly on young girls in our secondary schools. You've seen a couple of weeks ago in terms of Grok and our Commission Amon sent it to the EU Commission to do the heavy lifting. I mean, we're not leaving or living by best standards. And what we end up having, to your point, is we have an imbalanced EU when what should happen is if whether you live, love, study, work anywhere across the 27 member states, so too should your rights. I'll be talking to you hopefully by the later this summer to talk to you about the impact member state law has on the likes of rainbow families that cannot travel with their children, or they're not recognised perhaps by medical professionals if a child in their life gets sick. So there's a lot of that imbalance. And when you think homosexuality was decriminalised close to 36 years ago, and we're still nowhere near the balance of fairness, and it's built in our treaties, it's built into the fundamental rights. And often I'm as frustrated as many when a decision gets made on a Monday and it needs to be acted and respected. And what also happens, particularly around your and rightly pointed out the trans debate and challenge we're having. We wait sometimes at a European level to see what happens in different elections. So in Hungary, we have elections in next week or the week after, Poland and France after that. So, you know, people then wait. And sadly, it becomes a game of political whack-a-mole. Again, as I shared, minorities like women and LGBTI persons of colour gets used in a politicised way. But it's incredibly frustrating considering I'm talking to you because it was an EU citizens initiative. Mm. So over a million signatures, 1.2. It was the fastest citizens engagement that we've seen in recent years. And now the Commission needs to step up, and member states like our own needs to also do the same.
Yes, because I think, I don't know if it's the right word, but the Republic of Ireland, whether people agree or disagree, is more tolerant. And we've seen that with recent votes in the EU where MEPs voted on certain matters. Irish MEPs voted one way, and you go to the east of the EU and it was a completely different vote. So If you can't get this over the line now on a national level, you wonder when you might. Okay, listen, thanks for the insight. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Look
thanks
after
so
yourself.
Much.
Bye-bye. That's MEP Maria Walsh there. Now, just a couple of bits of housekeeping. I want to let you know about the Donegal Vintage Classic Car and Heritage Club. They are holding a special event on Easter Sunday. It's an Easter Sunday show, in fact, on the 5th of April. It's in aid of the acute stroke unit, Letterkenny University Hospital, and it's at the ATU Letterkenny. So the show starts at 10:30 a.m. and it's a classic and vintage car display. Classic and vintage cars on display. Entertainment on the day by Paul McCahill. And that's at the ATU in Letterkenny. It starts at 10:30. Well done to them, actually. They've put together a really nice poster there. It has a vintage feel to it. And some nice motors on the front of it as well. So if you want to support the acute stroke unit, Letterkenny University Hospital, get your vintage car down or get your eyes down to look at other people's vintage material at the ATU in Letterkenny for the Donegal Vintage Classic Car and Heritage Club. Please wish a very happy 8th birthday to Isla Lynch in Milford from Granny and Grandad. Happy birthday, Isla. Lots of love from Granny and Grandad. Please wish Avery happy 8th birthday. It's not Avery. Please wish a very happy 8th birthday to Isla Lynch. That's another one coming in from your granny and granddad. It's great that we're on the Easter break because we're getting requests for our younger listeners. Jessica Sylvia is in Stranola. Happy 8th birthday to you, Jessica, from Grandad Roger. And they're looking for a song. I don't even have time to talk, let alone play a song, but we'll get someone to play that for you a little later on. Thank you to the staff of both Letterkenny and Galway University Hospitals who've all been so good to my mother and to my brother too during a very tough health time in their lives. Well, I hope very much that they're on the other end of it right now, and I'm delighted you got great care and great support, and I hope everyone's feeling a little bit better and on the road to recovery. You're very welcome back to the programme, and we're really pleased to welcome onto it Damien Dempsey, who's going to be live and on Green on Theatre in Letterkenny on Saturday, May 2nd. Hey, good morning to you, Damien. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us on the show.
It's good to have you with us. Right, now, how's life been for you lately, Damien?
Very good, Greg. Yeah, I just came off a tour to the UK there. It was 7 gigs in 9 days. It was a bit hectic, you know, and the voice is a bit scratchy, but it's all good, you know. It's just getting out there to the people and lifting some hearts, you know.
Yeah.
The UK, yeah, lifting some hearts. Yeah, it was
Defo.
Great.
And, I mean, it sounds glamorous, doesn't it? And it is glamorous to an extent, but it's a tough old grind, isn't it, banging out 7 shows in 9 days?
It can be, yeah, yeah. Some of the facilities don't be great over there. Sometimes there's no dressing room.
Well, we can't have that. What about your riders? Take out the blue M&Ms, please.
No, none of that, no. That'd be more here, you know.
Come here. I didn't realise, actually, you were a trained boxer. I know this has probably not got much to do with On Green on Theatre, but it just was an interesting note when I was looking up. And your brothers, too. Your brothers, too, were from a boxing family, so.
Boxing, Kung Fu and, judo and stuff, you know. The two brothers would have done a lot of doors, you know, security around the city and that, you know. And but I was a hippie playing guitar, so
that's it. It wasn't for you.
I boxed for Dublin, yeah. For this was one back in my late teens, you know.
But it's kind of what I also thought a little interesting. It's quite the pivot, isn't it, from boxing, which is very disciplined actually, and is good to get your head into a right place. But then sort of into the music industry. When did you realise that there was something there musically, Damien?
Well, I think it was when Phil Innitt died, you know, Thin Lizzy. Phil Innitt, when he died, he died in 86, Greg, and everybody was playing his music, you know. And I was 11, and I was just this music, like it flicked a switch in me. And that's when I wanted a guitar, you know, and all my family like sing, you know, we'd have sing songs together, but nobody played anything, you know, instruments. So that's when I wanted a guitar, and sometimes I think if he had not have died, would I be playing now? I don't know, it's so strange, you know, but that's when I got in, and then I was writing songs in my bedroom, you know, my father could hear me, and he said, there's a 2FM Yoplait song contest coming up, you know, and I hear you singing songs there that I think they sound like they're your own. Are they your own songs? I said, yeah, yeah. So we went in for that when I was 16. And I got into the last 10 and we went out to RTE and it was live on radio. Ian Dempsey was presenting and I came second in the competition and won a ghetto blaster, you know. So I thought there was a song called Cardboard City about the homelessness I was seeing even back then, you know, around the city. So
what age were you then, Damien? Sorry, did you say?
16.
Right, okay. So it's quite an important topic to choose to write about as a 16-year-old. So you obviously were very connected with what was going on in your city.
Yeah, my first song was about the smog that was hanging over the Dublin down. It was killing people, you know.
Yeah.
It was really bad. If you went out in a white T-shirt, you'd come back and be black, like, you know. It was very, very bad then. All the coal fires, you know, that was my first song. So I was always sort of socially conscious, I suppose, you know, in me writing, you know, but the boxing was only for so I could carry my guitar around the neighbourhood because there'd be gangs on the corners, you know. You see a fella with long hair and a guitar, like you were a target, you know. So
yeah, I'm sure the word got around pretty quickly. Leave the guy with the guitar alone, right? Because he's got brothers too, and he's pretty handy himself. So was it at that point that you thought there could actually be a career in this for you? Because I think especially going back in the day, now we're not talking years ago, right? But, you know, I think your dad, it's great that he was so supportive of you and said that, you know, maybe you've got something here rather than clipping you around the ear and say, cop yourself on, go and get a proper job.
Sure. Well, there was that as well, you know. They didn't want me to get a proper job, you know, but I just felt I had something. I felt I could do this. I felt I could do it for a living, you know. I felt I could really take this somewhere, the music, you know, because when I perform somewhere, the audience would always, I'd always get them, be able to get them singing, you know. I'd always get them and just lift them, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You've sort of preempted my next question because, you know, the first thing you referenced about your recent trip to Britain was lifting people's hearts, I think was a pretty much a direct quote from you.
Sure.
It must have been, there must have been a moment or over a period of time where you realised you could connect with audiences because, listen, lots of people can sing and lots of people can write songs and there's levels to the game, right? Don't get me wrong. But connecting with an audience that you have done that gives you such longevity, I mean, your first album's over a quarter of a century ago, it's remarkable, right? When did you realise you could connect with the audience like that?
Well, it was the likes of, say, Christian Moore and that, you know, he gave me I met him in a bar that was like a singer-songwriters had a little open mic, you know. And Christian used to come in and just check people out and sing a few songs. And he saw me and he gave me a gig, you know, and he just gave me great confidence in myself. And it was when he met me, he said, Christy Moore couldn't believe it. And he said he took my phone number. You know, we only had a house phone back then. And that's how old I am. And
worst is it only had four digits. 526.
Oh, yeah. It was black and white. But I went home with all the family, you know. And the next day I got this call, you know. Hi, Lord, it's Christy Moore. And I said, yeah, Christy, I can't believe you rang me. And he was, you know, we were chatting away, and then his accent started getting a bit Dublin. Mm. And I went, who's this? And he just heard laugh. Christy was laughing on the other end of the phone. It wasn't Christy, that was my brother.
Oh, the...
pretending to be
Christy. Yeah, absolutely. And on April the 1st as well today, telling us that story.
I know, yeah. So the next day I got another call. Oh, I don't know, it was Christy Moore. And I was about to go, will you ever go on?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, it might be. It was actually him. Thank you. But then Christy gave me a big gig, Greg, and he got me up in the Point Depot, you know? 10,000 people there. And I was walking down to the show. I was that nervous. I was going to walk out in front of the car.
Oh, wow.
To get a broken leg, you know?
Yeah. A plausible excuse.
A small, slow-moving car, like a clown car, you know, like the smart car or something. But all I could see was big Jeeps and all, so I wasn't
you weren't having any of that. Okay. Big album release in 2024. For some people, it could be the full life's work, but you're still working on new material. And what's the theme of the new work going to be, Damien?
Well, there's a song there... about the young people are smoking this, it's HHC, it's called, you know, mm-hmm. and they're spikes and all, and it's driving them crazy, you know. So there's a song about that and just warning them of what they're smoking, you know, to be looking at what they're smoking, because some of it's going to drive them into an asylum, you know. And that's one of the songs, and there's different songs like that, just of bits of wisdom that I have that maybe young people wouldn't have, you know, yet, you know.
Brilliant, okay.
Trying to pass it on, you know, but I have a new album of old songs. It's
more of a trad album, isn't it?
Sorry,
more
Greg?
Of a traditional album.
Yeah. That's coming out next month or two. That's all old songs that I heard as a child at sing songs. And, you know, I've lots of young fans under 10, so we know if we do this album, they'll all be learning these old songs. Some of them are 400 years old, some are Oscar Helga, but are great stories. And if these kids learn these songs, hopefully their grandkids might hear them, you know.
Do you know, there's one common theme with our top musicians in this country that comes across each time I chat to them, and it's the same with you today, Damien, is often it's the influence of somebody else, or a leg up or support like you got yourself, as you've mentioned, but also then the willingness to pay it forward, to sort of say, right, you know, you're not a gatekeeper. You're actually someone who's to say, I can inspire or support the next generation or the generation after that. And it seems to be a common trend with all our best. And I think it's something young musicians can keep an eye out for as well, to not try and keep all the goodies to yourself. That it's a small ecosystem, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And it was lovely. I went into a sort of late night bar in North Dublin there a while ago, and an ECAPS manager was there, Daniel Lambert, a friend of mine, and he said, come on upstairs, there's a session, and up there was Lewis Capaldi, Sam Fender, and the Fontaines, you know.
In the flesh?
Yeah. Wow. They all had a little stage there, and they're all singing. It was one of their birthdays, you know.
Yeah.
Sam Fender came straight over, and he gave me a big hug, and he says, great to see you again. And I just go, hell yeah. Sam, he says, I supported you. You gave me my first support in Newcastle. And he said, you came into the dressing room. He went up on the stage and said this now to the audience. He said, you came into the dressing room after my gig, and after my 30-minute slot, and you gave me a hug and says, you have the magic, man. Keep that going, no matter what. And I couldn't remember this now, but it was nice to hear, you know.
He's something else. I know he's big, but he's got the potential to be absolutely, you know, a generational musician. He really is something else. And Lewis Capaldi, fantastic as well.
Incredible artist.
Lovely. What a happen chance. A lovely gig. Right. So we have you up here and on Green On Theatre in Letterkenny, Damien. It's on Saturday, May 2nd. So it's a nice weekend night. What can people look forward to?
It'll be a nice sacred sing song to start off the summer, you know. I just get people singing, and the Green On's beautiful. The last time people go up dancing as well, singing and dancing, it was brilliant, you know. So I suppose, you know, it's a roller coaster, you know. I get people up, I bring them down for a couple of songs, you know, get them, you know, get them emotional, bring them up again, and I'll be telling a few good few stories as well, you know.
Brilliant. Okay, sounds like it's going to be a cracking show. Damien, listen, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for sparing the time, and we look forward to seeing you next April, May. Yeah, next month now. All right, good luck to you.
Thanks very much, Greg, for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you. Damien Dempsey, he's live at Ungrianon Theatre in Letterkenny on Saturday, May 2nd. The show starts at 8 p.m, so you can make a night of it. Tickets are €37, inclusive of booking fee. So you can contact the Ungrianon box office for more details there if you want to get along. Now, ask Maria Walsh why, if someone wants to try conversion therapy, then why should you be allowed to restrict their freedom to do so? Well, I mean, anyone can do whatever they like. So if you wanted to go and get counselling, or if you wanted to speak to whomever you wanted to speak, that's completely up to you. There's a connotation with conversion therapy whereby, you know, there's not a choice, that it's a compulsion. And in some cases, it really can be. I don't see how anyone is wanting to willingly go and get electric shock treatment to try and fix them, in inverted commas. So that's what she's talking about there. Right, now, lots of you texting in, by the way. I'll get to those in a moment. But I first want to go to Ciara Ray, who's a resource officer for suicide prevention, Donegal Mental Health Services. Thank you for your time today, Ciara. I beg your pardon, maybe I said Claire, but Ciara Ray. And we're talking ahead of a Understanding Self-Harm, a one-day training programme, which is working to reduce the stigma of self-harm and the reason for the behaviour. So I suppose give us the background to this programme and why you see the importance of it.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for the opportunity to come on to tell you a little bit about our workshops and Understanding Self-Harm. We have a number coming up in the month of April and some in May also. And as you know, self-harm and behaviour is complex and it is multifaceted, Greg, and there's many reasons for that behaviour. It's many reasons that would lead to emotional and mental distress in us as human beings. There's often a lot of stigma out there in the community around self-harm and behaviour, and it can be couched in that stigma and that judgment rather than that understanding, compassion and that need for connection and support. Self-harm is probably, Greg, it's probably best understood as a way of coping with overwhelming feelings, and it's a sign that somebody is experiencing deep emotional distress. It often occurs when someone doesn't feel safe enough to express distress in other ways. So it's not about wanting to die. It's about trying to survive something very difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's not a mental illness. You know, so we would, through Connecting for Life Donegal, funded by the National Office of Suicide Prevention, we offer a number of trainings in terms of self-harm and suicide prevention that we offer annually free of charge to the community of Donegal, because it is very important that we begin to understand self-harm and behaviour. We have thousands of people presenting to emergency departments and to hospitals every year struggling, who are feeling overwhelmed and often silently struggling. And they're finding it difficult to express what's going on. But behind every statistic, Greg, is a person and a family and a community.
Ciara, I mean, obviously everyone's situation is different, but self-harm presumably can present in different ways. And it's like a lot of things that we talk about. People might have this one particular image of what self-harm might look like. But I presume it can manifest itself in different ways.
It can manifest itself in different ways, and it's often not, I suppose, helpful to go into the different ways.
No, of course not.
Rather than to describe it as a method, any method that someone uses to harm themselves. Mm. Now, in terms of what can help, we know that connection is the most powerful protective factor against self-harming behaviour. So it's really important. Many of us would experience times when life is difficult. And as you know, these are times when our mental health and our well-being is compromised, and our sense of connection with ourselves, others, and our community can be compromised. So it's really important that we create a society or a community here in Donegal that is self-harm alert.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to have the right words, Greg. We just need to be present, calm, and willing to listen. And training and workshops like our Understanding Self-Harm workshop can be really helpful in equipping yourself to respond, because any of us at any stage could come across someone who is self-harming.
Well, often I get contacts, or the program get contacts from a parent, often it is a parent in this case, who notices mm-hmm. that their child is self-harming. And they have no idea where to go, what to do, what it actually means, whether they discovered it, whether the person who was self-harming wanted them to see what they were doing with a view to reaching out. You know, it is a very complex area. Are there any pointers that you feel it's appropriate to give to me in relation to that position I've put to you?
Yeah, of course. Young people often struggle to articulate what they're feeling, Greg, and because of that, they themselves can be very vulnerable to self-harming, and it can become a coping mechanism. Now, we do want to destigmatise self-harming, but we don't want to normalise it because people can die. We need to find new ways of coping. And for parents, it can be a particularly scary experience when a young person divulges that they may be engaging in this behaviour, because it's nearly counterintuitive for most of us to harm ourselves. So it's really important in those moments for a parent to stay calm, maybe to open up the conversation and to intervene early and get the support that they need for the young people, because how they respond in that moment can really shape whether their young person will open up and discuss it again. There is perceptions and myths out there around self-harming that our training does address, that it is attention-seeking. It's not attention-seeking. It's connection-seeking. People can't just stop. It's not a choice. It's not as simple as that. So talking about it doesn't make it worse. Talking about it can reduce that risk and that isolation. So if a young person is opening up to a parent, it's really important that that parent, you know, in that moment stay calm.
Did you say earlier on that it is not a mental illness?
It is not a mental illness.
Well, what
it's a behaviour.
A behaviour.
It's a behaviour that we engage in at times when we're overwhelmed by emotional distress and we have the absence of other coping mechanisms in order to express this distress. And again, it's about getting support in early so in the longer term we can find safer, healthier ways to cope.
Okay, well, the one-day training program, which works to reduce the stigma of self-harm and the reasons for the behaviour, is taking place in the Rafal Family Resource Centre on Monday the 13th of April from 9:30 a.m. till 5 p.m. It's suitable for anyone over 18, not suitable for anyone bereaved in the last 12 months, you say, Kira?
Yeah, it wouldn't be suitable for anyone bereaved in the last 12 months because discussing the reality of self-harming behaviour can be traumatic and distressing. It also wouldn't be suitable for anybody who has currently ongoing struggles with suicidal thoughts or living experience currently of self-harming behaviour.
Okay.
We would recommend that if you have been bereaved by suicide that you give it at least 12 months. Before engaging in this training. And just to let you know too, Greg, booking is essential, but we ask when people do book for our trainings that they are fully committed, because this can be life-saving training. So we do like to ensure that the full 20 places per training are filled.
So just one other question in relation to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if we catch 20 just random individuals in the county, and then it's of benefit to them because they might happen to engage someone with self-harm, it's still worthwhile, do not get me wrong. But are you getting inquiries, or do you welcome inquiries from maybe people in positions within groups, or is this specific for individuals?
No, our training is suitable for anybody in the community of Donegal over the age of 18 years of age. We particularly, people who are working with young people would be particularly welcome on this training. So parents, carers, teachers, counsellors, social workers, youth workers, community development workers, or anyone in our community over the age of 18. But particularly because while our rates around self-harming would be particularly high among young people, we try to ensure that that there's a certain confidence and competency around understanding self-harm and knowing how to listen non-judgmentally, compassionately, keep people safe and get them to safety.
Thank you very much for your time. How do people, by the way, register? What's the best way?
Please, we also have, just in case, Greg, if it's okay to let you know, we have a number of other trainings coming up.
Yeah, go ahead while you have the time.
We have a training in Portney on the 9th of April in the Dolman Centre. We also have another Understanding Self-Harm and training running on the 16th of April in the ATU in Letterkenny, and one in Pettigo on the 11th of May. And spaces are still available in some of those trainings. Any queries in relation to the training, you can contact me directly at kira.ray@hse.ie or darlene@breakingthrough.org. And I think you have my number, Greg.
Yeah, we retain all of that info, because often people said, I heard this lady on about this, and we keep that info, and that's often the best way to get it out there. Thank you so very much for your time, Kira, there. Now, just to let you know, the countdown is well and truly on. In fact, it's almost concluded for tomorrow's big draw. It's getting real, isn't it? It's your last chance today to get tickets for our 10K home makeover draw with Foyes, plus €10,000 in cash. That's €20,000 in total. And you can use the €10,000 from Foyes or at Foyes to bring that dream home, that dream experience, that sunroom, whatever it might be, whatever part of your house, closer to reality. And then 10K cash to add to that, or do whatever you want to do with it. So to be in with your chance of winning this fantastic prize, buy your tickets online, highlandradio.com, click win a home, answer a simple question and choose your entry. Tickets are €15 for one. You can buy five for 50 if you want to buy five yourself or group in with other people. That means they're just a tenner. And the draw takes place tomorrow, the 2nd of April, and we'll be live on John Breslin's Around the Northwest show. And, you know, the one thing I've said before about these draws, it's always fantastic that it's not exclusively for people in this region, but they always win. And your chances, you know, are really favourable. I'm not overselling it, by the way, or exaggerating. But if you play the lotto, lots of you play the lotto, do you know what the odds of winning 150 quid is? 1 in 918. And your odds of winning 150 quid is 1 in 18,000. To win 150 quid, 1 in 18,000. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of the workings of the draw, but let me guarantee you that significantly less than that will be in that draw drum. So you do have a good chance, a better chance, but only if you get your tickets right about now. And the winning ticket may well yet have to be sold. We simply don't know. All the tickets will be in the draw drum tomorrow. So if you want to give us a call too at the radio station, 07491 25000, we can sort that out for you, or call into us here during office hours and we will not leave you hanging. We'll make sure everyone who wants to be in that draw is in that draw tomorrow. Connor, sorry for holding you there. We're talking about traffic in Letterkenny again, Connor. You're a professional driver. What's your experience?
Well, I suppose recently, like, you know, the hospital roadworks there, they're becoming, it's getting beyond belief, so it is now at this stage. You know, they're being narrowed that much, it's making it rather difficult to bring large vehicles through. I drive both lorries and buses, and as of recent, I had to take a coach home. You know, obviously, we're monitored very, very strictly with driving hours, and it's kind of the only really way that works. But I was coming down past and I had no choice but to try push out over on top of the cones. Now, damage to a vehicle of that size is incredibly expensive. Mirrors alone could be a couple of thousands. But the trees that are protruding, the width of the lanes there, it's just, it's they clearly don't think. I would love to know which college companies or associations have been contacted, if any, because there clearly doesn't seem to be any contact made there. You know, they're putting up poles which seem to be going to be for crossings, which yet again is going to make it worse. There's, I can name several different lorry companies off the top of my head that go up and down on a daily basis, you know, to farms and whatnot. And, you know, it really is, even the Ballyrain roundabout, another prime example. Like, you mean if you're turning left coming from the post there, I don't know where they think that there's going to be space for large vehicles at the rate of knots that they're going at.
You see, I think it is by design and not accident. I think the idea is to narrow it up to the absolute minimum to slow the traffic down. But presumably you as a professional driver, when you get two big vehicles meeting, you're right, especially if there's a high curve, you're right at the limit there, aren't you?
Well, like, I mean, look at the price of a tyre. Like, if you're putting a brand new Continental tyre on a lorry, you're talking maybe €750. Like, you mean, maybe a wingmer on a coach, you're talking maybe €2,000-3,000. Like, you know, like, you mean, this expense, I suppose, given the current diesel crisis that's there as well. Like, you mean, hauliers have enough expense. Coach operators have enough expenses. I mean, as I say, I would love to know which companies or associations have been contacted. And if they have been, then their views have clearly not been taken on board. Because it is, it's proven impossible. I had to get out the last day to actually move cones to give myself a bit of space. And the road maintenance operatives have come running up, oh, what are you doing, what are you doing? And, like, you mean, they don't understand, clearly, the issues that's going on with it. Like, you know, as I say, 2,000 or 3,000 maybe for a wingmer or something. Like, you know, it's beyond belief that they can't actually understand and comprehend that this is pretty much getting impossible for large vehicles to be able to move, like, you know.
All right, okay, interesting insight. We'll make some inquiries and to see what level of consultation there was. Stay safe, Connor. Thank you very much for your insight. It's really appreciated. Staying on, school transport, bus fees. The school buses should be free or nearly free to parents. Look how much traffic would be taken off the road in the mornings and evenings if school children were all bussed into and out of the towns. I mean, I don't think the cost, I don't think people are choosing to use their own time and their own fuel to get kids to and from school because £100 would be too much per year. For some, it's £100 too much. It should be free. I'm not sure. I think they seem to feel that maybe parents might value the spaces more if they have to pay for them. I'm not really sure what the motivation is. Bus Aaron up the rates as they have new 261 buses bought and we, the parents, seem to be paying for them. On the issue of dead deer or a dead deer. Hi, Greg. Can you let people know there is a dead deer on the road to Dunluce after the picnic area? Ooh, poor wee thing. God help whoever hit it, if it was a vehicle that hit it. Who's going to oversee the sewage and electrical connections in the garden shed houses proposed by government? Well, that would be done through planning, I presume. Another, it doesn't mean... it's a good question because these would be planning exempt, wouldn't they? Does this mean the council have to supply modular homes for people with council houses with defective concrete? No, it doesn't. Where we're at the moment is, as a councillor is saying, we should be availing of modular homes up here. Whether or not it would be the council or whatever, the individual, we're so far away from that, it's hard to see where we would end up there. Right, that's where we leave it on the programme today. Thank you so very much to all of you who listened. There was a lot of good news on the show today. It felt like there was a lot of good news. We covered the stuff we had to cover stuff as well, but it was great to recognise the fantastic community effort to retain our Dublin-Donegal air connection as it was. Maybe some positive news in the offing with St Eunan's getting a meeting with the Education Minister. So it felt like there was some positivity in there. But that's where we leave it for today. We'll be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, from 9 a.m.